I should have written it on the board, but I do want to acknowledge that Elaine's eyes look good, and we're glad to have all of that come through okay. We're going to be looking this morning at Judges. This may be the last lesson out of the book of Judges. It's possible. I'm thinking I'm not going to do much with chapter 17 and beyond. For those of you who haven't been with us, we're walking through the Bible a little at a time. We're in the book of Judges. There is a verse in Hebrews that talks about, a chapter in Hebrews that talks about people of faith. And when the stories of the people of faith come near to a close, there's a verse that says there's just not enough time to talk about. And it names six more people. Four of those people are characters out of the book of Judges. Judges were deliverers. They sometimes had judicial and community functions as well, but they were deliverers for their people. People would abandon God's rule. They would quit following Him, quit paying respect to the things He had said. Consequences would fall. The people would cry out to God, and God would send a deliverer, a judge. And for the lifetime of that judge, and maybe for a generation or two beyond, the people would be responsive to God. But then eventually, that would fall away and the cycle would start again. It's a very tragic book in that sense. But we're now looking at the fourth of those judges that are singled out. There's 12 total that are mentioned. We're looking at the fourth of those, and that's Samson. So if you'll turn to chapter 13. The rule is that you're supposed to have read this before you came. And supposed to have read this some time ago, which means it's now long enough that it might fade into to dismemory. But if you did read this, I'm wondering if you noticed something different about this story from all the other stories. How does it start? Verse 1. How does it start? Once again.
Now these are...
My translation says, once again, the Israelites began doing what is evil in the eyes of the Lord. What was the consequence that came? They were delivered, mine says, into the hands or the power of the Philistines for how long? Roughly two generations. Who were the Philistines? Well, we'll come back to that for a minute.
Are we in chapter 14?
I'm in chapter 13. I'm in chapter 13. That's where the story of Samson starts. I'm in chapter 13. That first verse says they were delivered into the hands of Philistines. What should come next? What's the pattern that we've been seeing? Because that pattern is now broken. The people cry out to God and God provides deliverance. There is no crying out. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just says the person who's writing this for us under God's inspiration has not chosen to mention it. Very interesting. God is raising up a deliverer, but the writer has not called any attention to the people crying out. Doesn't mean that they were not severely done, but it means something. I haven't figured out quite what it means, but I do call your attention to that. Now, deliver them into the power of the Philistines. Who were the Philistines?
I studied notes and everything, said they were very sophisticated in terms of both their armament, their numbers, and everything else. Plus, they were to the west of them, over on the coast.
How'd they get to be on the coast? I am now moving into rank speculation, but it does have some basis in commentators and others. 2 years ago, I think it was, we got off of a boat in the Mediterranean onto an island called Santorini. A few of you have had a chance to go there. It's one of the more beautiful places I think I've ever been in my life. Those of you who've been to Santorini, I saw at least these people raising their eyebrows and smiling and all that. Santorini has a very unusual location. I told you we got off a boat and it was in the middle of the Mediterranean. Do you remember what Santorini looks like? What does it look like? It's on the top of a mountain, but if you look, the mountain has a curvature to it. And there's two or three other mountains that form an island ring. form an island ring. Most people think that's the throat of a volcano that may have been the source of the Atlantis legend. All kinds of civilizations that seem by archaeology to have existed in that time seem to have been altered and wiped out in just a matter of moments. And most people who study this kind of thing are pointing to that location as a place where a volcano blew. And when it blew, the people who managed to survive had to settle someplace. And a lot of people think the Philistines were remnants of some of those civilizations coming in and settling on that coast. They would have said, okay, the islands don't look like a good place to be. Let's go to the mainland. And some people think that. There were five major cities, I'm told. I don't know the names of all of them. One was Gaza. I do know that. So when you hear of the Gaza Strip, that location is part of that. There's another city that starts with an A. Modern day is Ashdod. And that's actually where our boat anchored when we came into that part of the Mediterranean. It had a slightly different name in the translations that I see here, but I think it may be the same place. Five major cities that were there, each one of which was powerful in its own right, but sort of in a confederacy of some kind making up of people. And as they came in, the picture seems to be that they were pushing their way eastward back further inland. And that's consistent with this idea that maybe it was a population group that had been forced out of the island chains in the Mediterranean for this. In any event, they were beginning to come in, and the picture that you have here is the Philistines took over this part of the country. This was where the tribe of Dan was. So if you remember the tribes, this was the tribe of Dan. You can see them as maybe the first ones to get hit by the expansion the Philistines were making. And they were down in plains area where it wasn't too hard to get to them. The ones that were back up in the hill country might have been a little harder to get to. Delivered them into the power of the Philistines for 40 years. The next verse seems to have almost nothing to do with the first verse. Because starting there and running until verse 25, it talks about one particular family, a man and his wife, who lived in a town in the area that was the tribe of Dan. And it says in that same verse something about the woman. What does it say? She was barren. Mine says, yours may use another word. Interestingly enough, mine says she was barren, and then it says she had borne no children. It would seem like that would come from the first. But the writer has chosen to say it twice, at least in the translation that I'm reading from. Verse 3, what happens? Yours says messenger. I heard you say the word messenger. What does yours say? Does it say anything before the word angel? Yours says the angel of the Lord. What does yours say?
The Lord's messenger.
The Lord's messenger. Okay? The angel of the Lord, not an angel of the Lord. In my translation, angel and Lord are both capitalized.
Yes.
Appeared to this woman and said, this is harsh. What did she say? You are barren. You have had no child. That, it's very interesting. Verse 2. This was a woman who was barren. She had had no children. The angel of the Lord shows up, looks at the woman and says, you are barren. You have had no children. That seems like a harsh start.
Redundant.
Mm-hmm. And then the word but. And what does it say, Paul?
You are going to conceive.
You are going to conceive and have a child.
Now pregnant. Says you're now pregnant.
Does it? Okay, that's interesting. I didn't see that. Okay, now, I want to ask you this. If you were a woman who was barren and presumably had been praying fervently for child all this time, if you heard those words, what would you hear of everything that was said afterwards?
Nothing.
You would have said, I'm sorry, what? When startling news comes, that's the way you hear it. We were talking about something different with some friends last night. The circumstances were very different, but something as startling as this was said and the person reporting this said, they kept talking, but I didn't hear anything they said. And I finally said, wait, what did you say at the first? And you sort of have that sense. Now, we see what was said because the writer reports that to us. You are going to have a child. You are barren, you have had no child, but you are going to conceive and give birth to a son. From now on, my translation says, take great care. Do not drink wine or fermented liquor, and eat nothing unclean, because you're going to conceive and give birth to a son. Now, the bookends are, you're going to conceive and you're going to have a son. But in between, there's something, take care. Well, isn't that what you would say to any woman who is about to have a child? Isn't that part of the effort that the government and localities are making to try to have children have? It's called prenatal care, you know. Eat right, exercise right, don't smoke, don't drink. Fetal alcohol syndrome is a real problem in some parts of our country because women did not do this. Isn't this the sort of thing you would normally say? Well, apparently yes, but he says in the end of verse 5, something really startling. What does he say? No razor. Interesting, they had a word for razor back in those days. No razor is to touch his head. For the boy is to be God's Nazirite. Now, if you go back to the subject of Nazirite when it was mentioned back in the Pentateuch in the first five books, what you find back there is that was to be a voluntary thing, that someone would say, I will take that vow, and for a year I will be under such and such. This, I think, is the only place I know of where someone is made a Nazirite, but made a Nazirite before they're born. This wasn't voluntarily taken on by Samson. That may be of significance, but there you are. And it gives some detail. He is to be God's Nazirite from his mother's womb. And he will, mine has a very important verb form here.
Begin,
yours says. Mine says start the rescue of Israel from the power of the Philistines. Now, take a closer look at that spot. Does yours show that extra little phrase? It's not he will save Israel from Philistines. It says he will start the process. Yours says begin the deliverance. I think that may be even better than what I have. Start the process.
That says rescue. Begins with rescue.
Isn't it interesting that the cry of the people is not reported, and the deliverer is starting something, but the implication is that they might not quite finish it. Those of you who know the Samson story, you may recognize that there's some validity there. Verse 6, the woman then went and told her husband. Now, what did she tell her husband?
A man of God.
There are commentators who point out the word she uses for God is different from the word that was used by the writer. The angel of the Lord. It's a different word than a man of God. The angel of the Lord, we've had a discussion on other days with that word the. This implies God himself in some kind of form that could be seen as a human being. She says a man of God, which could be a prophet or a godly person or something like that. So she has not raised this visitor to the level that visitor might command. A man of God has just come to me who looked like what? Mine says the. Mine says the, not an. Does yours say the or an? Yours says an. Okay, so we can't necessarily build everything there. Who looked like the angel of God, so majestic was he. And then she tells her husband two things. What does she tell her husband?
I didn't ask him
his name, and I didn't ask him where he came from. What do you think the daddy's response is going to be? Why didn't you ask him his name? Why didn't you ask him where he came from? What's her response going to be? I don't know. Didn't think to do it. Yeah. Didn't occur to me that might be something to do. Allison pointed out the difference between men and women. Maybe this is another one like that. He did say to me, you are going to conceive and will give birth to a son. And from now on, drink no wine or fermented liquor or eat anything unclean, for the boy is to be God's Nazarite from his mother's womb to his dying day. It looks like she did hear what he said. She did hear what he said. What's the matter? Don't look. If you can, you've already read this, right? If you can, don't look. What do you think the man's response is? The husband's response? The father-to-be? What's his response?
Stunned and happy at the same time.
He might castigate her. Why didn't you ask your name? But he takes an interesting turn. Now go back and take a look at the next verse. What does the man do? It's beautiful what he does. Mine uses the word pleads with God. Does yours use a word that strong?
Please.
Prayed. Mine says pleaded with the Lord.
Entreated.
I beg you, Lord, let the man of God that you sent come to us again and instruct us what to do about the child when he is born. I hope you can see how beautiful that is.
He's also using the word us. His wife.
Instruct. Yeah, I hadn't spotted that, but that's good too. Please let the man of God that you sent come to us again and instruct us what to do about the child when he is born. The Lord heard his prayer, and the angel of the Lord visited who?
The woman.
Again, while she was sitting in a field and when her husband was not with her. The woman quickly ran and told her husband, "Look," she said, "the man who came to me the other day has appeared to me again." Manoah got up, looks like he was sitting too. Looks like they were sitting in two different places. Makes you wonder what they were doing when they were sitting in two different places. She in a field. I don't understand. There's an interesting little undercurrent there. Got up, followed his wife, came to the man and said to him, "Are you the man who spoke to this woman?" And he replied, a very interesting reply. Manoah then said, "When your words come true," not if, when. Does yours say when at that spot? "What will be the boy's way of life?" That is a great question. What will be the boy's way of life? Interestingly enough, the angel of the Lord keeps going back to, you shouldn't drink liquor. My mother did that. Your mother may have done that too. "From everything that I forbade this woman, let her abstain." That doesn't seem like he's answered the question very well. But there you go. Verse 15. The man, what's his name?
Manoah.
Manoah. We can agree it's Noah for the second and third syllables, right? So, Manoah. Manoah then said to the angel of the Lord, "Allow us to detain you while we prepare a kid for you." For Manoah did not know that this was the angel of the Lord. Now, kid means an animal of some kind, a goat, a baby goat. They're going to goat veal or something like that, I guess. For Manoah did not know that this was the angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord then said to Manoah, "Even if you did detain me, I would not eat your food. But if you wish to prepare a burnt offering, offer it to the Lord." Manoah then said to the angel of the Lord, "What is your name? So that we may honor you when your words come true." The angel of the Lord replied, "Why ask my name? It is a name of wonder," mine says. What does yours say?
That?
Beyond understanding, yours says. Marvelous, what yours says. Manoah then took the kid and the oblation and offered it on the rock as a burnt offering to who? Yours just says the Lord and stops. How interesting. Mine doesn't stop.
No, and he performed.
No, at the end of it. Offered it on the rock as a burnt offering to the Lord. Mine says to the Lord, the wonder maker. And there's at least one of the translations that supports that.
Mine says, to him who works wonders.
To him who works wonders. Yes, that was the one I remembered.
It says,
why do you ask my name? My name is a name of wonder. He offered the burnt offering to the Lord, the wonder maker, the one who makes wonders, I think you said, Jerry. Is that right? Manoah then and his wife looked on, and as the flame rose heavenward from the altar, the angel of the Lord ascended in this flame before the eyes of Manoah and his wife, and they fell downwards on the ground. After this, the angel of the Lord did not appear any more to the man and his wife, but Manoah understood this had been the angel of the Lord. And Manoah said to his wife, we are certain to die because we have seen God. And his wife replied, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he wouldn't have accepted a burnt offering and oblation for us. He would not have let us see all this and at the same time have told us all these things. And the woman gave birth to a son, and she named him Samson. There's probably meaning to the word Samson. I should know what that is, but I don't. Yeah, could be the man's nickname was.
S-U-N.
Is it?
Yeah,
the child grew, mine says, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir, mine says, to move, yours says, to stir him in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtel. Now, things go downhill pretty quickly after this. But there is something really cool about the start. He will begin to rescue the people from the Philistines. The Spirit of the Lord began to stir him. Now, interestingly enough, if you start at verse 14, there is a story that has several parts that runs until chapter 15 ends. And it's almost as if at that point the story should end. The way chapter 15 ends, the last phrase, looks like it should be a conclusion. Turn there for just a moment so that you can see what I'm talking about. The last phrase, the last verse of chapter 15. It's verse 20 in my translation, is that right?
Yes.
What does it say? Samson was judge in Israel in the days of the Philistines for 20 years. One generation.
Led them.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like, because all the other stories of the judges, I think, end with a phrase like that. They judged this long and then, you know, things that happened after that. That sounds like that should be an end. But chapter 16 gives you even more. So that's what we have now. We're going to look at 14 and 15. That's one series of interlocking stories of the life of Samson. And then there's looks like a conclusion at the end of 15. And then chapter 16 brings you some more information. I'd like to go through this quickly so that I can go to this. And I want to ask, what lessons should we learn from the life of Samson? And this is not easy to see. Because if you look at what Samson did, it doesn't look like something that is uplifting, holy, or righteous. You have read this, right? Okay. Verse 14, Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he noticed a woman, a Philistine girl. He went home and told his father and mother, at Timnah I noticed a woman, a Philistine girl. Do you notice how there's this repetition that seems to go in here? Went down to Timnah, noticed a woman, a Philistine girl. He comes back and says to his parents, I went down to Timnah, I noticed a woman, a Philistine girl. So, now, go get her for me to be my wife. Good Jewish boy. I want to marry that one out of Philistines. What do mom and dad reply? Some variation on how could you. Okay. Now notice how they word it. You can almost hear them say, oh Samson, Is there no woman among your brothers and sisters, brothers' daughters, or in our entire nation? Your brothers' daughters means in the tribe of Dan, in our entire nation, all the other tribes. Is there no woman among your brothers' daughters or our entire nation for you to go and take a wife among these uncircumcised Philistines? But Samson said to his father, get that one for me. I like that translation. You like that? Get that one for me. You sort of see it pointing. She's the one I'm fond of. Now, if you read that far, you reach conclusions. You read the next verse, and your conclusions change. They did not know. I'm looking at verse 4. His father and mother did not know. What did they not know? That all this came from the Lord. That's the way my translation gave it. Who was seeking grounds for a quarrel with the Philistines, since at this time the Philistines dominated Israel, or at least this part of Israel. Samson saw a woman, a Philistine girl, and says, go get her for me to be my wife. The parents say, reasonably, God said marry within the nation of Israel. They didn't know. What did they not know? They didn't know God was moving. Quite a quarrel they set up. You've read this, right? Samson went down to Timnah, and as he reached the vineyards of Timnah, he saw a young lion come roaring toward him. And I'll spare you all the details. The Spirit of the Lord came on him, and he killed the lion, barehanded. But he didn't tell anybody what he had done. He went down, talked to the woman, and mine says he became fond of her. I thought that had already happened. Not long after Samson went back to marry her, he went out of his way to look at the carcass of the lion. There was a swarm of bees that had taken up residence in the lion's body, and they had produced honey. He took some of the honey in his hand, ate it as he went along, and when he returned to his father and mother, he gave some to them, which they ate also. But he did not tell them where it had come from. His father then went down to the woman, and Samson made a feast there at the woman's village, as was the custom for young men. And when the Philistines saw him, they did something that seemed strange to my eyes anyway. Does it seem strange to yours?
Yeah.
He's going to have a bachelor party. Who's coming to the bachelor party?
30
men. Does he know these men?
No.
Seems like probably not. Who chose these men? The leaders of the Philistines. Why did they? One suspects that Samson would look like somebody you might want to take some precautions about. I don't know that this fits at all. In fact, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. There's a series of books about a guy named Jack Reacher. In those books, he's depicted as being almost 6'6", 250 pounds, a giant of a man who dominates everybody. There's now a movie out, and Tom Cruise is playing him. Tom Cruise is maybe 5'7", something like that. That just, you know, they're saying, okay, maybe the movie works, I don't know. But just this, you look at somebody that big and that strong, and you think, maybe there's a possibility of a problem here. Let's put some people around him. So there's 30 companions that stayed with him. Samson seems to have initiated something. One wonders why. What did he initiate?
A riddle.
And he tells them a riddle that has to do with that lion and that honey. And he says to them, if you can figure out the riddle, I'll give you 30 festival outfits. From inside out, I'll give you 30. But if you don't figure out the riddle, you'll have to give me 30 festival. You know, each of you gives me one, or I give you one for each of you. And what happens? For 3 or 4 days, they can't figure out what the riddle is. And then they do something despicable. What do? They go to his fiancée or wife. It's not clear where in here the marriage was consummated, but somewhere in here it was. They go to her, and what do they say to her? We will kill you and your family by burning you to death if you don't get him to tell you what this riddle is. How does she manage things? What's the verb that's used for her next act?
Wept.
It says. Mine says, went to him in tears and said, these guys are threatening to kill me if you don't tell me the riddle. Please tell me the riddle or I'm going to be dead. No, that's not what she says. What does she say?
You don't love me.
You don't love me. You only hate me. You don't love me. You've asked my fellow countrymen a riddle, and you've not even told me the answer. And he said to her, I haven't told my mother and father. Nobody knows this. Why should I tell you? Great line. Great line. Why should I tell you? She wept on his neck for the 7 days that the feasting lasted. What a happy party that must have been. What a joyous and happy occasion that must have been. She was so persistent that on the 7th day, he told her, and she told her fellow countrymen, and on the 7th day, just before he went into the bedroom, either to consummate or for another time, the men of the town said to him, and their response made it clear that they knew. His response to them is fascinating. I don't know how much theological power there is in these words, but there is human power in these words. What does he say? If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would never have solved my riddle. Woo-hoo-hoo. The Spirit of the Lord seized on him. He went down to Ashkelon. I think that may be an ancient word for what is now Ashdod, but I'm not positive of that. And I don't see this as something really nice to do for somebody who is God's man, but what did he do? Murdered 30 people, took their clothes, and gave it to them. Do you have the picture that the clothes he gives might have been covered with blood? Has that occurred to you? Gave them to those who had answered the riddle, and then burning with rage. What does yours say there? Burning with rage, burning with anger, your says. He returned to his father's house. Samson's wife was then given to the companion, one of the 30, who had acted as his best man. There's a mess. Not long after this, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a gift. With a gift. What's the gift? Same thing that was a sacrifice to the angel of the Lord back in the earlier section. A kid, I wished to go to my wife in her room, but her father would not let him enter. I felt sure, he said, that you've taken a real dislike to her, so I gave her to your companion. Wouldn't her younger sister suit you better? Have her instead. This is not good. There's little morality anywhere in here. But Samson answered them, I can get my revenge on the Philistines now only by doing them some damage. And in a very novel way, he commits arson on their crops. They get mad. This is verse 6 of chapter 15. And what do? They do exactly what they had threatened in the first place. They burn her and her family alive. And they're now dead. Verse 8. Verse 7, Samson said, if that's how you behave, I swear I will not rest until I've had my revenge on you. And off he went, causing them great harm. The story goes on that the Philistines came in force to try to capture him. The people of Israel said, we can't stand up to the Philistines. We're going to have to turn you over. They bound him in new ropes, turned him over. And the moment they turned him over, he broke the new ropes, grabbed the jaw of a donkey, a carcass of a donkey, second carcass that's been in the story, and slays 1,000 Philistines. And when all of that is over, he got thirsty. God gave him a spring of water to restore him. There's a parallel here to some things with Elijah. And then verse 20, Samson was judge in Israel all the days of the Philistines for 20 years. That sounds like it could be the end of the story at that point. But it's not. You still got chapter 7, chapter 16. Let me move quickly. Chapter 16 begins with Samson visiting a prostitute. He is really beginning to spiral down here. They see him come into the town. They decide they're going to take him the next morning and capture him and do whatever they want to with him. In the middle of the night, he decides maybe he's been there long enough. He goes out, picks up the town gate, posts, doors, bar, and all, carries it up to the top of a nearby hill, throws it there, and heads on home. You have here somebody who parallels Hercules out of Greek mythology. The power that he has is enormous. After that, it says, it's not the prostitute, it's somebody else. He fell in love with a woman in a certain place. It was a woman of the Philistines called Delilah. The Philistine chiefs visited her, and instead of threatening her, they made an offer to her. What's the offer? Each of us will give you 1,100 shekels. If you read the part of Judges that I don't think I'm going to deal much with, chapter 8, 17, 18, 19, if you read all of those, what you're going to find is that 11 shekels looks like might have been a yearly wage. And each of the chiefs, probably five of them, was going to give her 100 years worth. This is a ton of money. Then the threats are gone. It's replaced with a bribe. Cajole him, they said, and find out where his great strength comes from and how we can master him so we can bind him and subdue him. In return, we'll each give you 1,100 shekels. She begins to work on Samson just like his wife worked on him. Three times she asks him, three times he lies to her, but getting closer to the truth, his hair gets involved in the third one. Three times the Philistines come in, she arouses him, and he's able to break free. The fourth time he finally says to her, I'm a Nazarite, and if you shave my head, my power will leave me. There's something awful when the Philistines come in. There's something awful when the Philistines come in. Verse 20, she cried, the Philistines are on you, Samson. He awoke from sleep thinking, what did he think? I'll break free just as I've done time after time and shake myself clear. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. The Philistines seized him, put out his eyes, took him down to Gaza, fettered him with a double chain of bronze, and he put him to work turning the mill in the prison. Verse 22 is ominous. But his hair started to grow again. It ends with a great feast of celebration that the Philistines had. All the chiefs, all the leaders, all their families came. They all crowded into one big, huge place that was held up by pillars of stone. They brought Samson in to amuse them, to make sport of and fun of. And he asked the little boy who's leading him, put me close to the pillars. His strength returned, the Spirit of the Lord returned long enough for him to push the pillars down, and the place collapsed, and all the Philistines who were there died. That took away the leadership of the whole Philistine group, and there was safety for years. It says somewhere that lasted now for quite a while. Now, that's the story of Samson. What lessons can we learn from this? What lessons can we learn? I've consulted a few places, and I've got 10 of them. I have 9 minutes, maybe 8, so we will have to move fast. You ready? Number one, Samson did not appreciate the gifts that God had given him. He treated his strength as a tool either for his own pleasure or as a tool for getting him out of the trouble that his selfishness had gotten him into. Number two, Samson was inconsistent in his devotion to God. Every time he called, except one, God was there. But he took that for granted. He appeared to have charisma, charm, strength, and popularity, but he showed little sign of recognizing that these were all gifts from God. Number three, Samson did not learn from his mistakes. But, and this is a huge but, number four, Samson never stopped believing in God. And he did not blame God for the circumstances he was in after he was captured and at the end of his life. He never stopped believing that God could still use him, and God did. Let's move to the other side of the coin. Delilah shows us that people can be enticed to treachery and betrayal by money. Other people, the Philistine chiefs, often assume that great ability comes from a good luck charm of some kind, rather than from God. Number seven, awful things come when people who should be close to each other lie to each other. Delilah lied to Samson, and Samson lied right back. Not much good is going to come from that. Samson lied because he thought he was smarter than she was. She lied because she was smarter than he was. This guy's pretty dumb.
I thought you could say one of the things he's learned is not to trust a woman.
He didn't learn that. He did not learn that. Sin, like Delilah, is relentless, aggressive, and persistent, and it will hammer away at our resistance. Number nine, if we place ourselves under the constant pressure of temptation, it's pretty likely we're going to be, like Samson, worn down. I've got two verses I'd like to take you to. Proverbs 6 is the first one, so if you start looking for that one. Proverbs 6 is the first one. Numbers 32 is the second one. Let me read the second one first, Numbers 32. Be sure your sin will find you out. Powerful verse. Numbers 32, verse 23. And then in Proverbs chapter 6, I'm looking at verse 27. Can a man carry fire inside his shirt without setting his clothes alight? Can a man walk on red-hot coals without burning his feet? Can a man sin and it not end up hurting? Proverbs 6, verse 27. Number 10, and I finish with this one. Samson's losses were complete. He lost his freedom, he lost his vision, and he lost his dignity. But more than that, he lost his fellowship with God. He lost his spiritual discernment. Samson didn't know that God's Spirit had left him. He lost his ministry, and he lost his influence. Those are great things to lose. I'd like to close by taking you to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. This is a verse I think we ought to read every couple of months, given what we are doing right now. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11. Now all these things happened to them by way of example. They were described in writing to be a lesson for us to whom it has fallen to live in the last days of the ages. Everyone, no matter how firmly he thinks he is standing, must be careful he does not fall. None of the trials which have come upon you is more than a human being can stand. You can trust that God will not let you be put to the test beyond your strength, but with any trial will provide a way out by enabling you to stand up to it. What can we learn from Samson? Not realizing all that God is doing, not appreciating all that God is doing, is a path that leads to pretty hard ends.
Kind of like last week, but he had taken it on himself. The cause of it all to give it to God.
Yep. Now, there's a couple of chapters left in the book of Judges. I'm going to entrust you to read those. I don't think there's much there that's going to give us good things to talk about. These are very hard and harsh things. Many commentators think these were things that happened early in the history of Judges and that most of the rest of the Judges happened actually after this. I don't know how to read that. But we're going to start next time with the book of Ruth, and I hope that you will go and read that before you come back next week. Let's have a word of prayer. Our Father, we've seen this morning what has happened to a man who had strength beyond any strength that any man has ever had. And yet with that strength seemed to misuse it left and right. We pray this morning that you would help us appreciate the gifts you give us. That you would help us always be mindful of the responsibility that comes when you give gifts to someone. And we pray that you would take our gifts and turn them into your service so that we can be effective tools in the work of the kingdom, work that would lead people to you rather than being obstacles in the way for you. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.